We've been in doing this series called Play the Man, and today I want to talk to you about this subject, take control of your soul. It rhymes. That was intentional. There's a story, a true story, about a young boy, and this was the year 1900, not too long ago for some of you. It was Halloween, and this little boy, he's 10 years old, he wanted to go trick-or-treating with his brothers. And his brothers were going to go to different places in the neighborhood. Probably not the best journey for this little 10-year-old boy, so his parents, they just straight up said, no, you can't go, sorry. Well, this little boy, he threw a grade A tantrum. He was filled with rage. He went outside and he punched an apple tree until his fists turned red and they were bloody. Now, this young boy's dad did not look fondly upon this temper tantrum. So back in those days, they dealt out some discipline in the form of a hickory stick. So he got a few licks, went to his bedroom, crying and sobbing into his pillow for hours on end, or maybe just an hour, until after a while, his mom walked in. Now, mom was always the one that was good at diffusing things. She was good at putting things into perspective. And during this time, this conversation with this little boy, she shared this verse from Proverbs 16:32. Her version said, "He that conquereth his soul is greater than he that taketh a city." He that conquereth his soul is greater than he that taketh a city. Fast forward from that point, 66 years later, and that little boy identified that moment right there with his mom as one of the most valuable moments in his life. From that point on with his mom, from that short talk on forward, the trajectory of that boy's life completely changed, starting from just that conversation. And maybe you've heard or know who this boy is. Dwight Eisenhower, that's right. Dwight Eisenhower is one of the most decorated heroes in our country's history. 2 terms as president, Supreme Allied Commander during Operation Overlord. You know, that was the liberation of France. An invasion of Germany that began on the beaches of Normandy, June 6, 1944. So how interesting that this verse his mom told him about he who conquereth his soul is greater than he that takes a city. That's like a military-style verse. He that takes a city is like a military person or a king that takes over a city. How interesting that this verse would later apply to Dwight Eisenhower, and Eisenhower would one day be a man who would take multiple cities as leader and allied commander. Now, Eisenhower, he didn't just change instantly overnight in that conversation with his mom. It took many years because he struggled in school with he had anger issues. He still had a temper, but he kept in his mind going back to that point with his mom and knowing that that sinful nature that would rise up inside of him, it needed to be subdued as much as possible. Otherwise, it would overtake him. Now, all of us in here today, we fight daily with our souls. And when I'm referring to our souls, I'm referring to that part of our spirit, maybe we want to call it the flesh or something else, that part of our spirit that wants to act in contrary to what God wants us to be. And taking control of our soul, or what her verse said, conquereth his soul, if you like the King James, that means more like a mature patience. That means keeping our emotional side in check. It's not about changing our personality. It's not about changing how God made us. We all have different personalities. Some of us are more boisterous. Some of us are more subdued. But sometimes that can lead to the more sinful sides of our personality. Some people can get a lot angrier a lot quicker. Some people, I'm a more subdued guy, so I tend to retreat and do sin by omission. I don't deal with things, and that's the way I sin in that regard. But, you know, God made us unique, but he wants us to be able to take control of our souls and check that sinful nature that slides into our life. Proverbs 16:32 says, "Whoever is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who takes a city," or taketh a city, if that's what you prefer. So what steps can we do in our own life to rule our own soul? Number one, we must defend our hearts and minds. We must defend our hearts and minds. So this passage, it's got this military aspect to it. So not so much in this day, but obviously in the past, military leaders and kings that conquered cities, they were celebrated as the heroes. They were looked upon as the bigwigs, the guys that you'd read about in history books, the conquerors of the world, the kings and the generals. They were put on a high pedestal. And those are the stories that people celebrated. So the writer of Proverbs uses this language here, he who takes a city, this is the person of highest caliber. This is the person that if you rule your own soul, you're better than this person that can take a city. And we need to have, when it comes to our souls, we need to have a fighting mindset when it comes to defending our hearts and minds. See, all of us in here, we control the gates to our hearts and minds. It's the one thing that we actually have control over. Everything that's happening out there right now, we can do what we can, but ultimately, we don't have control of what's going on around us. We can only control us. And that what we're supposed to do is to defend ourselves, and yet so much of the time, we are derelict on our duty to defend our hearts and minds. We are passive when it comes to our soul. And, you know, it may not seem like a big deal, so what's the big deal with defending our soul? Over time, it can completely change us, completely change the person that we are. So one thing we got to consider when we defend our hearts and minds, we got to consider what we see and what we hear. All of us in here need to consider what you see and hear. Two primary gates into our life, the eyes and the ears, what we see and what we hear. And so many people in our world today are desensitized to the world around them. They let anything come in. They don't think, oh, maybe I shouldn't look at that. Maybe I shouldn't listen to that. Maybe I need to change the station. Maybe the words this person is speaking to me right now, I need to turn away from that. But a lot of people, maybe some of you in here, just let anything come in that comes in. You're like, it's no big deal. But the Bible speaks multiple verses about what we do with our eyes, what we do with our ears, especially when it comes to lust. Job 31:1, I've made a covenant with my eyes not to look lustfully at a young woman. Matthew 5:28, I say to you, everyone that looks at a woman with lustful intent has already committed adultery in his own heart. So God's making it clear here that we have to be careful what comes into our hearts and minds through our eyes and our ears. And how are you doing today with taking heed with what you see and hear? So one of the most horrific things and scary things today is the way that the internet, through the use of mobile devices and computers and whatever else, is ruining the souls and minds of a lot of young kids, especially boys. Many of these kids are brought up, and especially since we are a less spiritual culture now than we ever have been, their parents aren't thinking, I need to teach my kids how to guard their eyes and their ears. I really need to work on that. Their parents don't know that they need to do that. They're brought up and they're being taught that anything they see, they hear, just go on, move along. But it's bad. It's really bad. For boys especially, cell phones with full internet access are given to them as young as elementary school. And they can be exposed to horrific things. I shudder right now. I'm 36. I was in middle school kind of right about when high-speed internet came out. But the computer was in the center of the house. Doesn't mean I was a good boy, but I shudder to think if I had a mobile phone at that age with high-speed internet, what would come across that screen? And for a lot of young men, and women too, it's horrific. It starts out, you know, they're just looking maybe at pictures of naked women or whatever, but then over time, if not checked, it progresses into horrific and disturbing imagery. And these boys, they're not even fully mature. They're going through puberty at this time. They're attaching sexual arousal to these horrific images, and something that God gracefully has intended for a man and a wife to celebrate together, that is being destroyed by these images these boys are seeing. It's attached to something horrific. And what they're finding out now that we have research going on with kids that have been exposed to this as a young age, that these young men are being addicted to the grossest imagery, and then when they decide to have a normal sexual relationship with a woman, they can't have it. It doesn't work because their brains have been hijacked by this imagery. They can't have a normal physical relationship. And the technology nowadays, you can actually do these interesting brain scans and compare a healthy brain with a brain that's been exposed to porn at a young age. And what they see is the pleasure centers of these brains are completely destroyed. They are completely ruined, just as bad, if not worse, than hard drug addicts are. And what's this from? This is from opening the gates. Let anything come in that'll come in. So, and oddly enough, in the last 5 years or so, there's finally a growing scientific consensus that pornography, when exposed to early and frequently in life, is a bad thing. If only someone would have sounded an alarm that pornography was bad. Oh, wait. Christians have been doing it for a while. Why does this matter? These kids needed to defend their soul from what they saw, and they didn't know how to do it, and parents didn't know that they needed to instill that in their children. Now, it's not only about what we see, but also what we hear and what we actively choose to listen to in our life. And I'm going to ask you, do you actively choose to listen to words that build up and don't tear down? It comes with what you watch and listen on TV. Yes, I'm talking about, you know, pornographic stuff, horrific images and stuff like that, but I'm also talking about a multitude of things. Are you listening to negative political commentary hours on end every day? Do you think that's healthy for your soul? Now, I'm not saying you can't watch the news. I'm not saying that that's bad. But if there's a constant negative flow of commentary into your head, guess what it can make you into? Might turn you into a grumpy person. Have you ever met that person that doesn't matter what's going on in the world, they're already going and griping about something that's happened because that's all they listen to. You got to be a gatekeeper to what you listen to and take a break from the negativity, because guess what? The channels on TV, that's how they hook you in. They want you to watch the ads, so they'll keep feeding you that negative stuff because you're going to keep on eating it. You got to learn to shut it off to protect your own soul. So you got to be careful. Not only do you need to consider what you hear and what you see, you need to consider your thought life. 2 Corinthians 10:5 says this: we are taking every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. Taking every thought captive. What are you doing today to take control of your thought life? Now, there's different people in here that use their brains a lot different. Some of us in here just don't like to think. You know what I'm talking about? Some of us, when we get to a time where we're just alone with ourselves and our thoughts, we're like, I don't like this. Pick up the phone and get on Facebook or something, or get on the internet or turn the TV on. Just being alone with your thoughts, that scares you. And that's not healthy. We need to learn to be alone with our thoughts and deal with them appropriately. There's other people, you might go to really dark places when you're alone with your thoughts. And you take a no thought captive to Christ. You're just letting your brain go wherever it goes. And I mean, it's just my thoughts. Nothing's gonna come from my thoughts. It's just what I'm thinking. Nobody can read my mind, right? So one guy can. Maybe there's a guy at work that you don't like, but you're not expressing that. When you go to work, you're going to be nice to each other, and you want to keep your job and stuff like that. But when you go home, you daydream about beating the tar out of this guy. You know, we've done that. I've had, growing up, people I didn't like, and I dream, oh, if I could just beat them up, that'd be so great. Maybe you do that. Or maybe there's a woman that you know. Maybe it's a neighbor. Maybe it's someone at work. And you think a lot about her, even though you know you're never going to make any action towards her. You're married, you have kids, you'd never ruin your life like that, but your thought life is captivated with her a lot. You don't do anything, you just think. guess what? Our thoughts define us just as much as our actions define us. We need to take every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. Every thought. Spouses that end up cheating on each other, it usually doesn't happen in a vacuum. Like one day I'm walking down the street and I just see a pretty girl and I'm just going to cheat today. That's not usually how it happens. It usually starts with either husband or wife and their thought life gets messed up. And they either start thinking about how they're disgruntled with their spouse, and that just circulates in their head over and over again until an opportunity arises and they take it, or they think about another person they're attractive to, not thinking they'll do anything, and it just circulates in their head until an opportunity arises and they take it. Hey, thoughts matter a lot. We've got to be aware of our thought life before it takes control of us. And maybe you have a problem with that. I think there have been certainly times in my life where my thoughts are not captive at all, and I let them go wherever they go. One thing you can do as a step to help you take every thought captive is develop a mind that's always talking to God. And you think, wow, always, like praying constantly? I'm like, yeah. Believe it or not, God's not going to get bored with you praying to him all the time. Believe it or not, God's not too busy for you to have a constant one-on-one relationship going on. So if you think, which God is omnipotent, omnipresent, he does know everything you think. If you actually act upon that and realize, oh, God's always listening to me. God's always knows what's going on in my head. Well, I'm going to use that to my advantage and just keep him in the loop all the time. And if you know that God's in the loop with what you're thinking, you're going to think a lot better and focus your thoughts on him. And, you know, it's good to know that God's on your side throughout all this. And when you do mess up, he's right there and you can just ask for forgiveness right there. You know, you might be in your head saying, forgive me, Lord, a lot if you take this approach, but it's for the betterment of your soul. We must take every thought captive. Number two, we must be careful with our words and actions. We must be careful with our words and actions. So taking this military aspect, if we think of our soul, our spirit as a fortress, and we're defending it from what's coming in, through our eyes and our ears, we've got the gates up, we've got a guy through the peephole checking, like, okay, that's bad, you're not allowed in here. We've got guys with swords ready to go to keep the stuff out that doesn't need to be in. Oddly enough, we need some people on the inside too to keep where our sinful nature is exposed from getting out and hurting others through our words and actions. Our words and actions, I like to look at it at two extremes. They can be seen like an evil conqueror who comes through, or they can be seen like a relief organization. So what does that mean? If you think of like a city, and let's say a tornado or hurricane comes through and just wipes it out. Two different extremes could come in there, possibly. Here, what if you have an evil conquering army and military leader? Well, there's an opportunistic time to come in there, seize all the goods, take over the city, break down what hasn't been broken down yet, and make it your own. And then you've got the other side, the relief organization. What does that organization do? Well, it comes in there, you provide support, you provide food, you help that city get back on its feet when it's been broken down. And see, our words and actions, even though we're not always talking to people that might be broken down or anything, our words and actions can be like those two extremes. Our words and actions, they can cut down or they can build up. They can be of service to somebody or they can be selfish. And they can define to others what's most important in our life. And one thing that's very true is that few words can make a huge impact. Few words can make a huge impact. There's a great verse in the book of James, great set of verses here that say, now if we put the bits into the horses' mouths so that they will obey us, we direct their entire body as well. Look at the ships also. Though they are so great and are driven by strong winds, are still directed by a very small rudder, wherever the inclination of the pilot desires. So also the tongue is a small part of the body, but yet it boasts of great things. So in relation to the ship, the whole ship. The rudder's a really small thing, yet it directs everything, every direction that the ship is going. Our tongues, the words that come into our mouth, they might seem like small things, but it directs our whole life and it makes an impact on the people around us. So all of us in here, it doesn't matter how athletic or small, tall or small you are, handsome or ugly, how intimidating you might be, how weak you might look, your power, your wealth, or your lack thereof, the words from your mouth makes the biggest impact on the people that are around you. Maybe you've seen or heard of this guy right here. Anybody know who that guy is? Andre the Giant, Andre Rostamov. Andre was billed as 7 feet 4 inches. He weighed 520 pounds. Anybody in here be intimidated in Andre's presence? Come on. We all would be intimidated. If especially if we didn't know who he was. And especially if he just showed up wearing that, walking in the room, and you'd be like, oh man, that's a big dude. But there's, if you've, in the last few years, there have been books and documentaries written about Andre. There was a great book about the Princess Bride movie from the lead actor, Cary Elwes, and he talked about Andre a lot, and then there was a documentary about Andre's life. One thing that's interesting about Andre is he was a man of very, very few words. Very few words. And yet, when he walked into a room and these people got to know him, Andre could disarm all their fears and intimidation with a few words. For one instance would be, you know, he's working in the movie. All the guys he would work with and be around, he would instantly just start referring to them as boss. Like, hey, boss. That's how he referred to all of them. And he's calling these guys that are, compared to me, you know, they're short, this short, and Andre's calling them boss. And immediately, that broke down a barrier of this intimidation factor where you felt the warmth of Andre and you felt that, you know, just with those few words, you felt he was a, you know, a guy that you could be around and not feel so scared of. And he did the same thing with all these women he was around in the movies and stuff like that. He would just speak gently to them. He wasn't speaking a lot, very few words, but the words he spoke would just disarm them so they wouldn't feel so scared around them. Because he's, through life, he was huge when he was a high schooler, a middle schooler. He saw kids, you know, running from him, be scared. So he had to figure out, okay, how can I make these people feel more comfortable around me? And it was with the few words he used that they were felt disarmed and they were comfortable around Andre, this huge giant. He was a man of few words, but he was disarming and with the few words he said. So a few words for us and whatever we say make a huge difference in how others see us and how others perceive us. Number three, we must actively yield to the true ruler of our souls. So I'm kind of bringing it home here. When we talk about taking control of our souls, it's important to know who the ruler of our souls is ultimately. Matthew 16, 24 through 26. Then Jesus told his disciples, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits his soul? Or what shall a man give in return for his soul? So when we take control of our souls, the only way we can truly take control of our souls is if we all in here acknowledge that in and of ourselves, we're powerless. We are all powerless. We need the hand of God to help us on a day-to-day basis. We need the hand of God to help us control our souls. So what do we do? Well, one, we need to stop thinking that we are ultimately in control. That's the spirit of the age right now. We're all autonomous beings, ultimately in control of ourselves. Nobody should tell us what we should do. Nobody has any authority over us. That's the mindset right now, and it's ruining cultures. And there can be, you know, some of us in here, we have these control issues. Some of us have the natural tendency to try to control everything about our life. We're ultimately responsible for our spouses, our kids, our job, our church, our neighbors, our grandkids, our neighbors' pets. We know we're in control. We try to control everything. And it ends up not working out well when we're control freaks like that. And we can fall into, you know, doing too much on our own accord and trying to control everything. And there we end up not relying on God. We just rely on ourselves and we fail. Or we end up not doing enough, not doing anything active in our lives, also not relying on God. And then we feel guilty when things don't work out for us. So we need to realize there's an interesting duality here when it comes to the way God made us. God created us, all of us in here, in his image. Now, if you ever really think about that, it's kind of just baffling that God didn't just make us something just random. God says he created us in his image. So when we see each other, there's some kind of visualization of what God is like. And it's amazing to think about that. But even though we are created in his image, we know that we are not God. In fact, we are nothing, absolutely nothing without him. So even though God says he created us in his image, he didn't say that to give us a big head like, oh, I'm something special. No, you're nothing special unless God's hand is upon you. So what do we do? We need to be confident that God has made us and formed us. God has done that. But we don't need to be overconfident that we can just run away from our maker after he's formed us and we can be everything God created us to be. No, God made us, but he made us also to be with him. He didn't make us and just kick us out of the house and say, you know, call me later. He made us to be attached to God. And not all of us in here are called to be Dwight D. Eisenhowers, obviously. We're all here. We're not running huge military commands or whatever. But even though we all have certain circles of influence, God calls us to those paths in our life. We don't need to look at the people that have done great things, the Billy Grahams, the Dwight Eisenhowers, whatever, and think, man, God really used him. He's not really using me. No, there's only so much room for those great personalities. God calls all of us in the big things and the little things, big national world acclaim. Maybe you're called to just you and your block. Maybe it's just you and your family or your neighbors. If it's that small, so what? God wants to use you in that regard. He values all of us equally and wants to use us in whatever influence he gives us. So for all of us here today, how do we ultimately control our soul? Well, we got to yield to our maker, and we've got to trust in him in every step of life.